Today, more falls shake the market. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, this is our weekly market update, and well, it's been quite a week. We'll start in the US, go across to Europe, Asia, and end in Australia. And of course, now we know. The Dow skidded on Friday as a stronger than expected monthly jobs report quelled hopes of a Fed pivot and shifted investor focus on the prospect of another jumbo-sized rate hike next month. In fact, the US economy created 263,000 jobs last month. That was above the 250,000 economists had expected, while the unemployment rate unexpectedly dropped to 3.5% as fewer than expected people entered the labour market. Wage growth of 0.3% was in line with forecasts, but slowed to 5% from 5.2%. in the 12 months through to September. So while this was a welcome development for the Fed, according to Jefferies, it won't provide a justification for slowing from the recent pace of 75 basis point rate hikes. So we expect another one in the November meeting. And the CME FedWatch was close to an 80% probability of 75 basis points. New York Federal Reserve President John Williams, who also serves as Vice President Chair of the Rate Setting Federal Open Market Committee, said on Friday that the US Central Bank has more work to do to lower inflation and to rebalance economic activity in a more sustainable way, and he warned that the unemployment rate will most likely rise as part of that process. We need to get interest rates up further and basically get interest rates above where inflation is, and that could lead the central bank towards a target rate of around 4.5%, Williams said. Doing so will better balance supply with demand in a way that brings down inflation quickly. The Fed has boosted the federal funds target rate, which it uses to influence the momentum of the economy, from near zero at the beginning of this year, and officials have penciled in increases that will take the rate to around 4.6% by next year. Williams said the US economy has a very strong labour market, which is a good thing, except for very high inflation, which is being countered by central bank rate rises. And he added, over time, you're going to likely see the labour market, you know, maybe not as strong in terms of the job growth that we've been seeing. And he added that there was an economic slowdown underway, especially in the housing market, but he said he didn't expect the economy to tip over into a contraction, a fear that's common in the financial markets. I do see positive growth next year, he said, and I see the unemployment rate coming up somewhat, but most importantly, I see inflation coming down pretty significantly next year, Williams said. He spoke, actually, at the end of a busy week for commentary by his fellow central bank policymakers. Williams kicked off the week back on Monday when he said that the Fed had still some ways to go with rate rises to get high levels of inflation under control. And he noted then that while there are some signs overall inflation may be cooling as pandemic-related disruptions ease, overall price pressures remain problematic and it's going to take years to get back to the Fed's 2% target. The revival of hawkish Fed bets pushed Treasury yields higher, with the 2-year up to 4.31% and the 10-year up to 3.888%, meaning that recession signals are still there. And pushing growth areas of the market, of course, including technology and consumer discretionary stocks, into the red. The dollar index rallied for a third straight day on Friday as those long on the greenback tried to reprise the 20-year highs from a week ago. And additionally, gold futures moved down by 1.1% to 1,702. Now, of course, the central banks already signaled that US interest rates will end the year above 4%, pointing to more pressure on risk-driven assets. In fact, a week that saw the biggest stock advance in a month quickly became another week to forget for investors who are now being punished in real time for each impulse of optimism. After mounting the best 2-day rally since April 2020, the S&P 500 ended with 3 consecutive declines, with losses snowballing to around 3% on Friday. Reaping the S&P 500 5-day gain required enduring an increasingly typical rollercoaster ride, fueled by false hopes for a friendly Fed Reserve around mixed economic data. And so the volatility index rose. Turmoil wasn't confined to equities. From bonds to currencies and commodities, volatility has whipped up across assets and regions, prompting warnings that the Fed should stop rate hikes soon to avoid economic and financial fallout. Stress in the global financial system has recently been higher than at any time since the immediate aftermath of the 2020 pandemic crash, according to data from the Bank of America. The week was a microcosm for the whole year, when any attempt to get a clean read on the economy and Fed policies has proved futile, while weakening manufacturing stoked speculation of a less hawkish central bank. A solid jobs report validated those who say thoughts of a Fed pivot is wishful. It felt like another month this week, Rick Rader, Chief Investment Officer for Global Fixed Income at BlackRock, said. It's the most exhausting trying to parse all this data. And in the end, the S&P 500 rose 1.5% over 5 days, snapping a three-week 12% slump. For a 40th straight week, the index has averaged a daily swing above 1%, a stretch of prolonged volatility not seen since 2009. And of course, it's down 24% over 9 months. This retrenchment has already outlasted five of the previous down cycles, or half of all the bear markets since the 1960s. This thing just drags on and on, said David Donabedian, Chief Investment Officer at CIBC Private Wealth. What tends to happen then is that some investors lose hope, this idea that it's never going to get better. Feeding the gloom is the impossibility of predicting the post-pandemic world. Central bankers and investors alike misjudged the stickiness of inflation. Lately, it's become clear that retailers miscalculated consumer demand and ended up stocking too much unwanted goods. The Fed has been increasingly clear that substantial weakness in the economy may be at the expense for return to lower inflation. As rate hikes feed through to the real economy in the months ahead, the labor market may well weaken further, reflecting investors' recessionary concerns. And consumer spending, the main driver of the US economy, has actually held up in recent months, despite the spike in prices eroding purchasing power. But anecdotal reports of job losses are rising as firms announce job cuts or hiring freezes, especially those in the housing and tech sector. Peloton this week announced its fourth round of job cuts this year, shedding another 500 positions, or roughly 12% of its workforce. And some retailers have also been scanning back hiring plans, with Walmart, for example, saying it was hiring 40,000 workers for the holiday season after taking on 150,000 last year. So in the end, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 2.1%, the NASDAQ slipped 3.8%, and the S&P 500 fell 2.8%. Microsoft fell more than 5%, followed by Meta and Apple and Alphabet, as a rising rate environment tends to sour sentiment on higher valued stocks with a longer payoff horizon. Tech was also pushed deeper into the red by a slump in chip stocks, following a profit warning from chipmaker AMD. Advanced Micro Devices plunged nearly 14% after announcing preliminary results for the third quarter that missed Wall Street estimates. The miss on revenue guidance was driven by a weaker than expected PC market and the resulting inventory correction in the PC supply chain, Deutsche Bank said in the note, after cutting its price target on the stock to $90 from $95. Nvidia slipped 8% and Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing fell 6%, and Qualcomm was down more than 3%. On the earnings front, Levi Strauss fell more than 9% after trimming its full-year guidance on ongoing supply chain troubles and a stronger dollar bite. The broad market drop comes ahead of fresh inflation data, which will come out next week, and that's going to influence the Fed's thinking on rate hikes. But without a precipitous drop in economic growth or a deep recession, the slowdown in the pace of inflation is going to be slower than what everybody hopes, Robert Conzo, the CEO of the Wealth Alliance, said. You're going to have a period of sideways markets as the economy is unlikely to go into a deep recession because people are working and spending, he said. That trend isn't going to change very much, meaning that inflation will be sticky, he added. Future earnings, of course, is now the key question. And in fact, the S&P 500 index would already be in an earnings recession if it were not for just one high-flying sector in 2022. Namely energy. Higher oil prices have led to huge profits for energy companies so far this year. FactSet forecasts a 118% jump in third quarter profit as earnings begin to roll in line with huge gains through the first half of the year. And overall, FactSet forecast third quarter earnings per share growth for the entire S&P 500 to come in at around 2.4% when compared to the year earlier period. And Delta Airlines and big banks like JP Morgan Chase will kick off the earnings session for the quarter in the weeks ahead. As Wall Street zeroes in on whether businesses can pivot amid higher prices, a stronger dollar, lopsided supplies, and signs of weaker demand. Excluding the energy sector, the earnings estimate for the third quarter would actually be a drop to a 4% decline. During the second quarter, earnings declined 4% when factoring out energy's gains. And if you put the two quarters together, then you have an ex-energy earnings recession, or at least two quarters of bottom line declines. If you include the energy sector but excluded all other individual sectors, the overall S&P 500 earnings growth rates for both quarters would remain positive, they said. And interestingly, the biggest US banks are expected to report weaker third quarter profits as the economy slowed and volatile markets put brakes on deal making. Four of the nation's largest lenders, JP Morgan Chase & Co., Wells Fargo, Citigroup and Morgan Stanley, will all report third quarter earnings next week. The results are expected to show a slide in net income after turbulent markets choked off investment banking activity and lenders set aside more rainy day funds to cover losses from borrowers who fall behind on their payments. Banks typically earn more when interest rates rise because they can charge customers more to borrow, but their fortunes are also tied to the health of the broader economy. Of course, the Federal Reserve has raised benchmark rates from near zero in March to the current 3 to 3.25% and continue to signal more increases. While rising rates tend to buoy bank profits, the broader risk of an economic downturn sparked by high inflation, supply chain bottlenecks, and the war in Ukraine could weigh on future earnings. And while higher rates are expected to boost net interest income at the two largest US banks, JP Morgan and Bank of America, the jump in borrowing costs has also hurt their mortgage and auto lending businesses by cooling demand. The concern is that rates will rise too much and slow the economy or push it into a recession, said Matt O'Connor, an analyst at Deutsche Bank. Analysts expect profits at JP Morgan to drop 24%, while net income at Citigroup and Wells Fargo are forecast to decline 32% and 17% respectively, according to recent data. Investment banking powerhouse Goldman Sachs is expected to report a 46% plunge in profits when it reports on October the 18th, while earnings at rival Morgan Stanley are expected to fall 28%. The drop comes as corporations' interest in mergers, acquisitions, and initial public offerings have dried up. Analysts expect Bank of America's third quarter profits to fall nearly 14%, with robust growth at its consumer division estimated to partially offset the decline in advisory fees. In fact, the S&P 500 bank index is down almost 26% this year, and shares of Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which are not part of that index, are down 20 and 17% respectively during the same period. JP Morgan President Daniel Pinto told investors last month that he expected the bank's investment banking fees to fall between 45 to 50% in the third quarter. For some investment banking business, weakness was exacerbated by a decline in large private equity buyouts. Deal making in that market dropped 54% to $716 billion in the third quarter from the same period of last year, according to Dealogic data. US banks wrote down $1 billion on leveraged and bridge loans as rising interest rates made it tougher for them to offload high-risk debt onto investors and other lenders. We're expecting further losses on those deals, said Richard Ramsden, an analyst at Goldman Sachs, who oversees research on large banks. It's going to vary quite a bit depending on where the transactions were initially priced and how much exposure remains, he said. In fact, Wall Street banks took combined losses of around $700 million on the sale of $8.55 billion in loans and bonds backing the leveraged buyout of business software company Citrix Systems. Analysts also said banks will set aside more reserves in anticipation of more soured loans. We expect moderate yet increasing negative impact on banks' asset quality and loan growth stemming from the higher rates, inflation, and a mild recession in the US, negating some of the benefits of higher rates, analysts at Fitch Ratings wrote in a report recently. The ratings agency expects overall bank loans to drop 10% to 11% this year, but that could peter out as interest rates climb and the economy slows. Banks are going to be facing a much different 2023 than they did in 2022, said Christopher Wolf, who oversees Fitch Ratings and analysis of US and Canadian banks. Crude prices jumped 5% on Friday and double digits on the week as oil bulls starved of gains from a four-month-long sell-off piled back into the market on this week's production cuts announced by OPEC. The Brent World benchmark for crude broke above $98 for the first time since August the 31st, rising 12% on the week to $98.52. And West Texas Intermediate, the US crude gauge, had an even more eye-popping gain of 17% on the week as it crossed $90 for the first time since July the 24th. It ended at $93.29. OPEC Plus has done whatever it takes and is now waiting to see what the reaction will be from world leaders, said Ed Moyer. The reaction from the US government at least could be to limit the amount of fuel that can be exported out of the United States in a bid to stop gasoline prices from retracing their mid-June record highs of $5 a gallon. As of Friday, the gasoline prices at US pumps were around $3.80. OPEC Plus, which groups the 13-member Saudi-led organization of the petroleum-exporting countries with 10 oil exporters steered by Russia, announced on Wednesday that it was billed to cut 2 million barrels per day, but that figure was well below the 3.5 million barrel daily shortfall in the group's previously announced output target. What's more, there was no breakdown on where the reductions would come from, in other words, which countries would be cutting and how they would be doing that. The alliance had banked on the markets to just swallow what it said and send prices back near the highs of the year. Oil bulls predictably have done just that. Now, of course, a strong dollar is anathema to dollar-denominated commodities, including crude, as it raises the transaction acquisition costs for commodity traders using the euro and other currencies. But Ed Moyer said the momentum in oil for now might overwhelm any upward trajectory in the dollar. A strong dollar is eating away at some of crude's weekly gains, but that won't have a lasting impact, he said. Now, European stocks rose after opening slightly low on Friday as investors awaited the release of the US jobs report. In the end, the FTSE closed at 6,991, down just a little, while the German DAX fell 1.79% to 12,273 and the French CAC 40 fell 1.47% to 5,866. The UK 10-year gilt or treasury bond rose 1.55% to 4.3025 and the 30-year was up 1.71% to 4.407, as data show that the Bank of England had only been lender of last resort to the tune of about £4 billion since it announced its intervention in the markets to protect the UK pension system, which was way below the funds approved. But government funding costs are still creeping up. The German 30-year is at 2.138, while the 10-year is at 2.197, which is signalling more uncertainty. And elsewhere, data showing a bigger-than-expected 1.3% slide in retail sales in Germany in August also dented sentiment in Europe. And in corporate news, Credit Suisse Group has offered to repurchase $3 billion worth of its own debt in a bid to solidify confidence in the embattled lender. And JD Weatherspoon PLC also narrowed its annual loss compared to the previous year, despite surging labour and energy costs. Shares in the UK pub chain rose. The euro was last at 0.9745 to the US dollar, while the pound was at 1.1086, both underscoring the strength of the mighty greenback. In Asia, things were pretty muted on account of a week-long holiday in China, but most indices in the region were on course to make some gains over the week after they slumped to their worst monthly performance in September since the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Shanghai Composite was last at 3,024, while the Hang Seng was at 17,740, and the Korean Kospi was at 2,232. Many countries are being hit by their rapid depreciation against the soaring dollar. Japan is right at the top of that list, and the hot jobs report today from the US could well be a catalyst for another round of foreign exchange intervention. The decline in foreign reserves in September was actually the largest on record, in part due to the intervention 2 weeks ago. The yen is trading at above 145 to the dollar, just shy of where the Bank of Japan intervened in September, and around the level the BOJ conducted a rate check the week prior. The Nikkei 225 was down 0.71% to 27,116. In Australia, a perceived dovish pivot from the Reserve Bank and scaled-back expectations over the rate of Australian interest rate increases did help the benchmark S&P ASX 200 index add 4.5% in the past week. But that said, the RBA continues to say rates will run higher, and we think for longer. The energy sector, of course, dominated during the week. Investors bid local coal, gas, lithium and oil stocks higher in response, with the energy sector up 10.2% over the week. Oil and gas giant Woodside posted 5 straight days of gains to firm 10% over the week. And coal miners Whitehaven Coal at $10.96 and New Hope at $6.85 soared to record highs on Friday and lengthened share price rallies, which were sparked by Russia's war in Ukraine and Europe's scramble for energy supplies. So on Friday, the S&P ASX 200 fell 0.8% to 6,762. The best performing sector was energy, up 0.95%, and the interest rate sensitive tech sector lost 1.8%, and the real estate sector shed 2% as government bond yields ticked higher. Australian 10-year government bond yields rose to 3.918, while the Aussie dollar was down to 63.70, a 2-year low, as markets reacted to the weaker than expected RBA move and the stronger US dollar. Shares remained at high risk of further falls in the short term as central banks continue to tighten. Uncertainty about recession remains high and geopolitical risks continue, said Shane Oliver, the chief economist at AMP. Shares in asset manager GQG Partners closed lower after it said total funds under management fell 9.3% in September to $79.2 billion. It said clients liquidated $1.5 billion to meet margin calls related to liquidity problems at UK pension funds over the month. And Magellan shares fell to a 9-year low of $10.46 on Friday, following the asset manager's day earlier statement that its total funds under management tumbled 11.6% in September. The best performers on the market include Brazil-based offshore oil producer Karoon Energy, which added 9.2%, while coal junior Stanmore Resources soared 9.6%. And in crypto, Bitcoin continues to track the main financial markets, with the last price reported at $19,565, while Ether was down 1.81% to $1,334. Bitcoin continues to hover around the $20,000 mark US, which has become a hugely important psychological zone for the cryptocurrency. Often in markets, we talk about key levels or areas, but with Bitcoin, it spent most of the last 4 months fluctuating around that $20,000 mark, with a healthy margin for error on both sides. While there may have been concerns when it dipped below or excitement when it rallied above, it could be really important for Bitcoin that it has found a base around $20,000 that traders are seemingly comfortable with in these turbulent times, at least for now, because there may well be a case that a bottom has formed. Another risk-off panic would quickly put that theory to the test. And October, as you know, is a problem month, even in the normal course of events. So we are, I'm afraid, sounding a bit repetitive at the moment. High volatility, more risk to the downside, more concerns about high interest rates, etc., etc. And this, of course, all means that markets are destined to go lower through the month. So anybody who thinks that there's a pivot or somehow we found a bottom are simply kidding themselves. Best thing to do is just sit and wait. Let's get October out of the way. But expect also markets to be considerably lower by the end of the month. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.